step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hello, Fishes, folks, and friends, and welcome to this special bonus episode of Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul. I'm Paul.
And I'm Sarah, and we have more Pauls in store for you.
We have one more Paul in store
for you. Yeah, but it's a significant Paul. It's the creator.
The most significant Paul. The Uber Paul.
I mean, you don't need to, like, sell yourself short. You are also a significant Paul.
Created the show, dude.
He did. Paul T. Sharing created the show, and he is with us today to discuss not just an episode, but the entire first season.
Which is great, because all season, as you know, it's probably gotten annoying at this point where we've said, oh, yeah, we got to ask Paul that.
We got to ask Paul.
Let's ask Paul. I don't know. Paul would know that. So now we can ask him that. So this will be a 14-hour podcast.
Exactly.
No, we're going to keep it.
This is, there's no Calistine Index today. It's just all Pauls all the time, plus one Sarah. But to introduce him properly, our guest today is a novelist. He is the author of The Far Shore, which I've read, and The Resurrectionist. He is also a TV and film writer, known for A Man Apart, Prison Break, Klondike, which I loved, and Zero Hour. And like both Paul Edelstein and myself, born in Illinois.
Oh, I didn't know
so,
that.
Paul, welcome to the
Hi,
podcast.
Hi, Paul. It's so good to see you.
Yeah,
welcome,
it's
welcome,
awesome
welcome.
To see your face. It's been a long, long time. But you guys look like the years have treated you well. So thanks for having me. Yeah.
Well, we've spent the last few months watching ourselves from 18 years ago, and that is it's great. As Sarah likes to say, this is great. I love watching this show. I don't know who any of those people are.
None of them. What I realized is the kid that I was pregnant with in season two.
Oh no!
Closer to the age I was when I did that show.
Yeah.
Than I am to that. It's literally like watching somebody I don't know.
And Sarah and I have both subsequently become writers and directors, and being able to also see what was kind of a better understanding of what was going on story-wise, dramaturgically, and especially in my case, I don't know, cinematically.
Yeah.
Appreciation of how TV was just not made that way then. Okay, but before we love to talk about ourselves. First question
yeah, the
for
top.
You, Paul. When's the last time you sat down and watched season one of Prison Break, or have you ever?
Subsequent to, you know, the editing bay, I haven't watched any episodes. So, and I have a question for you guys. I can't remember what year the show came out. Is it actually 2004, 2005? Is this the 20th year?
It was 2005.
2005. Okay.
It was 2005.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think I've watched an episode once they left the editing bay from any of the years.
Amazing.
Not even to like get ready for the season 5 reboot thing, because I rewatched season 1 to just be like, what did we even do? But you just jumped right in.
Yeah, I mean, it's once you live in the narrative of the writer's room, you know, creating it, and then again, you know, the ad nauseum, you know, repetition of the editing bay where you're just constantly grinding the story, mm-hmm. they become pretty deeply wired into you. At least that, I think, was my position before I became entirely old and senile, because I do want to go back and watch the first season now, because I think there's so much of it that I've forgotten. And, mm-hmm. you know, my kids are growing up now, and yeah. My son is 14, and I haven't showed him the series yet, and so I kind of feel like maybe it's time to show him the series, but I haven't watched them.
We have discovered, I mean, we remember the high points and a lot of details, and then there are things in any given episode.
Oh my God.
Like, oh, I totally forgot. I was like, wait,
what?
The toes we remember, obviously.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that they came at the end of episode 2.
Right. And then there's so many reversals that you're just like, oh, I don't remember that this, that X was setting up Y. There's just so many things you forget about. But let's go back even further.
Well, can we start with, because there've been so, there's so many stories, and they can't all be true, about how this came to be, right? Was it a 6-episode miniseries written for Fox? Was it a 2-season, blah, blah, blah? Like, what's your memory of how these scripts landed in our hands, written by Paul T. Schering?
I'm going to go way back. I'm gonna you know, even precede Prison Break. And it's one of those, you know, really kind of amusing, you know, stories of the journey of how things come to be and where you end up in your career and whatnot. But, it, you know, preceding Prison Break, I had been a feature writer in the 90s with a writing partner. And, you know, the big fish were, for writers in Hollywood were, you know, the feature gigs. You know, TV was really considered this, you know, afterthought and kind of lesser product. And, you know, we ultimately dissolved the partnership in 2003. And there's this perception in Hollywood that if you have a writing team, you know, once they dissolve, everyone gets very uncomfortable about the prospect of hiring anybody, you know, either or, right? Because the question always is,
interesting,
who's the writer, right? That, and that's always a question. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that really absurd, you know, why can't they both be writers? But so when you dissolve a partnership, at least back then, there was, you know, the challenge of reestablishing yourself as a solo shingle. And so I was pounding the pavement in Hollywood and, you know, fell in with the producer, Don Peruse, who then was working with Neil Moritz and Marty Adelstein. And they had this idea for, you know, you want to do a Prison Break, a escape series. And I thought, you know, first of all, like The Great Escape is my favorite film ever, right? And I'm like, I love the world. But in the back of my head, I'm like, they're never going to do a serialized prison escape show. They're just not going to do it. But.
Because they weren't doing any serialized shows yet.
No. And so I still, you know, trying to prove myself, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this job. I'm going to write this script. And they're not going to make it, but I'm going to write the hell out of the script. And so everyone's going to see that I can write as a solo act, right? And that was my intention. I really thought that nothing was going to happen. So I wrote it and turned it in. And, you know, there's all this, I mean, you guys have experienced this probably subsequently, but there's all this, you know, excitement on the studio's behalf. You know, the agents are saying, oh, they love it. They love it. They're just trying to figure out how to position it. You know, it's all that kind of conditional, non-committal, you know, love. And they said they just don't know how to skin this thing, right? But so they feel like they got to bring in a big producer, right? So initially it was, you know, Bruce Willis's people are really excited. You know, they want to produce it for like a limited run for Fox. And I said, well, is Bruce going to be in it? And they're like, well, no. And I and the producers, Wyatt, said, well, you know, it's either got to be Bruce or, you know, or not. And so that fell out. And then subsequent to that, Spielberg read it. And I went into DreamWorks and I sat with him. And it was really, you know, this really exciting time because, again, I'm nobody. You know, I'm trying to disestablish my first solo shingle. And here I am, like, riffing with Spielberg about the series. And he's asking me where it's going. And, you know, he's a very, you know, collaborative dude. And I'm like, wow, I'm sitting with Spielberg. And, you know, if I can get this guy on board, this is a go. And he said, I'm going to do it as long as it doesn't take me away from my feature agenda because I haven't directed a film in 3 years. And of course, like 2 months later, they got the green light for War of the Worlds and Spielberg was off. So once again, you know, you're getting all these teases, right? You're so excited. You're like, you know, here's this chance to finally launch, you know, my solo career. And so we're in this kind of...
Was he going to direct the pilot or all 6? Or what was it? What was it at this point? Was it just the pilot?
I don't think he even would have directed the pilot. I think he would have executive produced. Okay. But I mean, you know, at that time, 20 years ago, you know, executive producer Steven Spielberg presents, you know, it would have been a big splash.
Sure.
And so, you know, we're back to square one and Fox is back in this space of, we're really excited about this. We're just trying to figure out how to skin it. And you start to lose hope. You know, it's everyone's saying that this thing is going to go and you're like, this is all Hollywood promises and it's never going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And then Lost premiered, right? And Lost premiered to these enormous numbers, you know, back then because nobody had anything else to watch except, you know, network TV, broadly speaking. And And the next day, literally the next day, I got a call that said, Fox is greenlighting the pilot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was literally the next day. And that shows you the way the wind blows in Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. So, okay, so you get the call. They say, we're greenlighting this. Do they then say, like, make it 7 seasons? We want something that can go 100 episodes. Or does anybody at any point go, you created this pilot that we really like. What's your vision? Like, what are those next developmental steps?
Yeah, by all means. And so, you know, they had put me through the paces and said, where does it go? And I had, overdone my prep and, you know, said, here's every single beat and, you know, season one and whatnot. And they kind of, you know, what they really heard was, oh, he's got a plan. And so one in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
And they're like, it really doesn't matter until we shoot the pilot and we see what we've got. And then we put that up against all our other pilots and decide, you know, which ones we're gonna run with. So that's when they brought on Brett Ratner. And, you know, the Brett Ratner circus was in town for a few months and we had to start casting. And that's when we met you fine folks and went to Chicago.
Wow. Okay. So, Sarah, where do we start? Was it always Chicago? Was it always Fox River Joliet, Chicago? Was that in the your original idea? I didn't know you were born in Illinois. Is there some kind of connection there?
No, that was fortuitous. It was, one of the mandates that I had was I said, look, you know, prison itself has got to be character, you know, because prisons, you know, as you know, like real modern prisons are extremely, you know, unpleasant places and aesthetically, you know, depressing places. And it's just, you know, we have to have a majestic kind of, you know, gothic character that our characters inhabit. And so that, you know, we went through a few different possibilities. And they said, well, what about Joliet? And Joliet's like, I think, 30 miles up the road from where I lived on the farm back in the day. So that was exciting for me. And we went back. And what was interesting, actually, was they were shutting down Joliet at that time.
Right.
And so there were actually still some prisoners from the annex across the street working in the yard when we were scouting it, right? And, you know,
wow.
Of course, I was nervous as hell because we're walking amongst the prisoners. And they're like, oh, don't worry, they're short. And I'm like, I didn't understand what that meant. I'm like, what do you mean they're small?
They're short?
Yeah, they're going to kick my ass. I mean, I don't care. But but that was slang.
They don't have a lot.
It was slang for they're less than 30 days left. And they're not going to do anything stupid because, you know, try to escape or attack somebody completely screws up their chance for release.
Yeah.
But you know, loved Joliet. It was like just this beautiful place. But as you guys know, you know, once we started working there, the cell block was pretty depressing. And so, you know, here I was this, you know,
say that again.
This young writer that, you know, didn't really know if I could, you know, manifest things. And I said, listen, this is all great, but the cell block won't work. It's like, we need a big towering cell block with two sides and light coming in from above and, you know, kind of a theater, you know, a theater for these actors to be moving around. And they said, you know, there was a gym at Joliet. And they said, well, let's build in there. We'll build the cell block. And at this time, I was like, can we do that?
That's where that was.
And I think Steve Beers, the executive producer, you know, penciled it out and said, yeah, I think it'll be about $300,000. And I heard that. I'm like, oh, well, obviously we're not doing that. And they're like, no, we'll do it. And I'm like, You can actually manifest.
That's a rounding error. Yeah. We're Fox.
Right.
So they go to make the pilot. You don't know if it's going to go to series, but they shoot the pilot. And then sometime over the spring, they get it picked up. And then they're like, okay, give us 22 episodes, 21 episodes, whatever it was. At what point are you opening a room? You said you pitched it out to them, but how much did you really know of, like, this is going to be episode 2, this is going to be episode 3, here's the midpoint, and, you know, was it catch as catch can, or was it, as I suspect, some combination of both?
It was definitely a combination of both. And I think an interesting anecdote is that, as I said, I overprepared, so I knew where the show was going. And subsequent to this show, I met with a lot of serialized, you know, showrunners. And I really was struck by how many of them just made up an intriguing pilot and then tried to figure out where it went. And that's always been terrifying to me, which is, you know, I mean, ultimately a story is a life support system for third act, right? In the conclusion. So I knew where it was going. Hmm. And I had pitched to Fox. I said, look, here's one season, 22 episodes. They break out in episode 13. And then we resolve it at the end of episode 22 and they take down the vice president. Right. And they said, but could you stretch that? And I said, look, the best I can do is, you know, accordion it to two seasons so that the escape is at the end of season one. And then season two, they're on the run and then we'll wrap it up. And in, you know, mm-hmm. in the extremely rare likelihood that is successful, you know, you guys can figure out that. And that all came to pass, right? But, you know, more specifically about, you know, what came for me and what came in the writer's room, I certainly had a vision. I certainly had a structure. But, you know, I mean, nothing beats sitting down with like six extremely good minds like the ones we had in that room to you know, create Teabag, to create Haywire. Haywire was the one guy that I didn't know was going on the escape. I knew the bad guy was going to go on the escape. I didn't know that it was Teabag yet. You know, and, you know, Teabag, obviously, you know, that's a case of a actor making his own, you know, his own work. Once Robert Nepper got on screen, you're like, we got to write to this guy. You know, he's just, he's incandescent.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome back, everybody.
And we talk a lot about, like, the tattoos themselves and some of the details that were so baked in. I mean, we were asking Karen about this. We're like, does the tattoo feel a little bit like just keep him covered up until we can zoom into a specific part of it? Or are you early on going, okay, cute poison?
Cute this poison, is going to be Alan. Like, you had some of these ideas when you pitched the pilot. Some of them are so good. I imagine they would have been great pilot bait. Like, this thing says Alan on his arm.
Alan, I had ahead of time. I would say the rest of them came out of the writer's room. I don't think there's any doubt that they came out of the writer's room.
Is English Fitz and Percy the actual intersection?
No. I think Zach Estrin came up with that. God rest him.
Listen, I want to get back to the Prison Breaks point, but you also did something that, as far as I know, the rest of the writer's room didn't, which is you took a pivot into novels. I mean, you talk about monastic. Like, I can only imagine that to go from a room with six giant minds pinging stuff back and forth, that process of writing a novel is so solitary. How was that as a transition?
You know, Hollywood's such a 50-50 thing. It's like, you know, first of all, it's so conditional creatively, is that, mm-hmm. you know, you want to manifest something. And as an artist, you really want to, you know, tell something that's true. And, you know, that's, Hollywood's not the business to do that. And you have to make peace with that. And you have to ask what your ultimate aims are. And I never really wanted to be involved in Hollywood. I kind of backed into it, but I always, you know, I always admired the great writers of literature. And I'm like, you know, I'm perfectly fine doing that. And you know, you can like my book, you can hate it, but that's me. That's me. Mm. It's like, that's my legacy. That's who I am. And you know, I've made some shows, in Hollywood where I'm like, that's so compromised. There's so many cooks in this kitchen. I made so many compromises myself, and you know, there's nothing there. It's just another one sheet, you know, and the million-fold one sheets on all these streaming services. And the only thing I remember from any of that that's worthwhile is the camaraderie when it works, right? But sometimes it's like, you know, am I really just chasing the camaraderie? And is it worth the price of so much Sturm und Drang, you know, so much bullshit going after all these meetings and dealing with executives and agents and these people that have forgotten how to speak authentically, you know, to other human beings. Yep. And I just like authenticity. I like real interface. And so the thing I miss is that sort of interface, but at the same time, you know, I have that elsewhere in my life in terms of my personal life, my community, my family, that sort of thing. And then at the same time, I get to feed that beast within me, that creative beast that says, you know, es muss sein, it must be, you know, this must get out, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, then, I mean, if you are interested or willing, like, I'm curious about then what Prison Break would have looked like maybe absent some of those concessions.
I have to say, Prison Break was this rare thing that worked. And, you know, this was never going to be, you know, Gone with the Wind or, you know, some art film. It was always meant to be a ripper. But we wanted it to have some soul and we wanted it to have, you know, integrity. And it all kind of worked. And, you know, we got our notes and, you know, we bitched and complained about studio interference. But, you know, subsequently on other projects I worked on, I experienced much worse, like way worse. So when I look at Prison Break, I'm like, they kind of comparatively left us alone, really.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because I thought all the actors were spot on for their roles, I thought all the writers were good people that were good at their job, you know, I was like, you know, we brought together a good group of people and we made something really good for, you know, for the genre and for the time. And so I don't have any regrets. I wouldn't do it differently. I mean, again, if you put a gun to my head, I'm like, just two seasons. It would have been over at the end of season two.
All right, Sarah, we got to get back onto season one because people are going to come find us and kill us if we don't ask him stuff about.
Okay, so I've got
some good details.
Okay, couple of things. So, you know, you mentioned that Nepper worked himself into a job. As you guys are, you know, seeing dailies, watching cuts, what were the other surprises, you know, in terms of like, oh, this is a relationship that we like, we're going to write more for. Both Paul and I came onto the show expecting, you know, I mean, I had a 10/13th deal. I figured I'd, you know, be recurring. And I think there was, you know, I think the idea was that like it was a one season role.
Well, you, Sarah, you were going to be in for the long haul. You were going to be in for the long haul. I know that. That was the plan. And, you know, obviously, elated when the dailies are coming back. It's like, you know, great. You know, we got another fantastic actor. But also, Paul, I'm trying to remember with you, because I don't know if you were supposed to die at the end of season one. But you were so good that we're like, yeah, this guy's got to stay for the run, you know. Again, talking about an actor making it work. Because, I mean, one thing that's easy to do is kill off a bad guy and, you know, dovetail in a new bad guy. But that's why when we cast this show, and this is my first project I did with the casting director, John Papsidera.
He's great.
Just one of my favorite souls. I just loved it because he'd read with you guys in the audition and we would crank auditions. You know, we got hundreds of actors coming through our room for weeks and weeks. And Papsidera is digging deep every time, reading off camera for him. And he's like almost going to tears. He's like acting, like giving you something to work with. And I'm like, dude, you are amazing. Yes. But it brings out a better performance from the actors, right?
It makes such a huge difference. And I mean, and Papsidera is one of the great ones.
Can we get to fan questions?
Paul, will you come back when we do season two? Would you come back? Talk to us again?
Yeah, of course. I like doing this. It's
He's
fun.
Like, I'm never picking up one of your phone calls again. Yeah.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to do fan questions. Okay, welcome back with Paul Shearing. Now we're going to do fan questions.
Let's see. We've got a whole bunch here. Well, this is an interesting one. At Prison Break Collection wants to know, What props or memorabilia do you have from the show?
Oh yeah, did you lift anything?
Did you boost anything from the set? Please tell me you have Belloc's cool leather jacket.
No, I love that. I don't have much. I have there's a front page of a newspaper. I think at the beginning of season two, where the guys are crossing a park, and then you dolly past somebody, and somebody's reading the newspaper about the escape. I have that on my wall frame. I think there was a watch that was buried out by the guards when they were walking the circuit at night. Mm-hmm. The Remedi, which was my girlfriend's last name at the time, that became my wife. And so I have that watch. It's this, prop department made this Remedi watch.
Do you know what? Actually, I'm not doing this intentionally, but I happen to have this right next to me. This right here is one of the five original paper cranes. I'm showing this to them. I'll take a picture and send it.
How did you get that? She stole it.
Our head of props, I didn't actually. Our head of props, Brandon, wrote me this really sweet letter when the show ended season four, when the show ended the first time. It's dated March 16th, 2009. And he was like, we commissioned five of these. Some guy made them. We didn't know how many we'd need. He's like, I always saved them, and I just wanted you to have one.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Super sweet. Brando was the best. We loved Brando.
We did.
Paul, you see any other questions here that you like?
Yes. At Prison and Break, two N's, did you have a favorite character to write for? And I don't mean like, I'll make it more specific. Not like story-wise, but like, is there somebody you just love putting words in? Like, loved writing the dialogue?
I mean, you have to say Teabag just because your id come out.
You know,
bad guys are just so much fun, especially when they're allowed to be fun. If he was just a straight, all darkness serial killer, I don't think I would be interested in writing that guy at all. But, you got to let out your naughty side. So I think that was probably the fun one.
What else was there here? This is interesting. At Scowie, with two Ys, asked if there was a season that you found that particularly harder to write than others. I mean, as you say, you plan, seasons one and two were a part of the plan. Were three and four, did they feel different or harder? I mean, for crying out loud, three was only a half season because that was, writer's strike cut short.
Oh, right.
You're doing it without Paul and I, which must have just been an absolute
disaster
of a slog.
Well, to be fair,
why bother?
Largely did it without me. I had said at the end of season two, it's like, here's kind of the stopping point. And you'll see this hinge at the end of season two where it's all going to come to a conclusion, right? And then final commercial break, and then all of a sudden this huge pivot. It's like, hold on, they're actually going to go to prison in another prison in Panama, right? And that was kind of that gratuitous, let's have another season moment. And I said, listen, I'll write the pilot for season three and, get that, escape from the Panamanian prison story going. But I largely wasn't involved creatively in that season. I wasn't creatively involved at all in season four. I don't even know what happened.
Oh, okay. I didn't. Thank you for that. I had no idea.
That was largely by my volition. It had run its course, and I had moved away from LA at that point, and I was on to other things.
This may be fake news. We'll find out. @n_dot_yo asks Paul, can you tell us about the script for 601 that you wrote that never made it to filming? What was your idea for Michael Cera /Mike in season six? Did you ever write a script for season 601?
Oh, that's fun. That's a fun story. So the idea was in Fox, because we had done the season five that, proved again to be, remunerative for Fox. And they're like, let's do another one. Let's make some more money. And I'm like, I'm not gonna do another series. Mm-hmm. I mean, we broke out of way too many prisons. But Dawn Peruse had come to me and she had said, well, what if, there's an obsessed person, manipulating Michael, and so I ran with that. And the idea was that, you remember the very first frames of the entire series where he's getting the tattoo, and there's a woman artist, and she's putting the ink to him, and he says, Sid, you're a genius,
right?
You're an artist, right? And I'm like, well, what if he had a relationship with Sydney, right? She became obsessed with him, and she didn't realize what he was doing, and then found out about the escape and how he became famous, and he developed this relationship with you, Sarah, and she became this obsessed fan that forces him to do something later. And I'm like, it's a little bit hokey, but I'll write the script and hand it off to Fox and let it be. Because I was kind of interested in going back into the pre-story of Michael. And then Fox came back with a bunch of notes. And I just said, I don't want to audition for this. I don't care enough about this. The real integrity of the show is the first couple of seasons. So I just said respectfully, let's just stop. I don't want to try to revise this. And so it kind of died there. And in that regard, I'm curious what the new iteration, what the conceit of that would be. Because again, I mean, you know, the great challenge with this show is that you can't reinvent. I mean, really, you can only break out once in an authentic way.
Yeah.
And everything subsequent to that just has that smell, that smell of you guys are just, squeezing the golden goose a little too hard here.
It feels contrived.
That's right.
One of the things that was so incredibly compelling about the tattoo reveal in season one is that this guy has every detail of this planned. That it's all premeditated. Obviously, a million wrenches get thrown in those works. But that was what was so fun. He knows the prison. He knows, the guy's a structural engineer and he's helped redesign this prison. That's a brilliant conceit, and you can't do that more than once.
No, and the critical challenge there was that you wanted him to obviously be our dynamic lead that you could connect to emotionally and that you could, root for, but you had to keep him at a remove from the audience, right? Because, half of the mystery of the show was what was actually going on in Michael Scofield's head, right?
Right.
And that's actually a pretty tough tightrope to walk as a writer, because you can't be completely forthcoming about your protagonist's motivations, right? And at the same time, you have to get the audience invested in the protagonist's motivation. Mm-hmm. But again, so much of that is, you cast Wentworth because, again, talk about casting. When we, try to get Michael Scofield, you just had, hundreds of young Hollywood actors coming in there delivering these lines about structural integrity and stuff, all this stuff, and you're just rolling your eyes and you're going, I am the worst writer ever.
Yeah,
I suck. And I mean, this is I don't know if you guys experience this, but it's like you write your script, you get greenlit, you start casting, and everyone comes in and you're like, no one can read it, I suck. And then all of a sudden that one actor comes in and you're like, oh my God, I can write.
Yeah.
And in the case of Prison Break, we cast for 2 months and you have a fixed start date, right? It was like, we're starting on whatever it was, Sarah said, November 1st or whatever it is. And it's like, dude, it's October 27th and we still don't have a lead for this show. And then Wentworth Miller comes in, it's like, oh shit, manna from heaven. Like I can write anything, any like polysyllabic paragraphic thing and put it in his mouth and he will kill it. I'm like, unbelievable, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he was unknown. I mean, like he'd done The Human Stain.
Yeah.
But, it's always interesting to me. You guys ended up with a lot of actors who had I had almost no on-camera experience. Like, you guys really took some swings at people rather than casting it safe and going, here are the people with the resumes. I think I remember, I don't know if it was you or Dawn, but somebody was like, you got cast because you said this line in the audition, and nobody else read that line in a way that made it sound like it made sense. And I was like, oh, and it was years before I would sit on the other side of it as a director going, have we just seen 40 people who can't say this line and have it make it sound like a human being?
Yep. Okay, we have one more fan question for you, which is Ellen Davies 1 says, did you have any storylines planned that you ended up jettisoning?
off the top of my head, I'm struggling right now. I do know there were some really...
No, it's okay.
Yeah, I'm no, but I think the answer is yes, but it's a bad yes, which is I can't remember what it is right now. But I do
that
remember...
That probably means it needed to go.
Is it,
yeah, that's
is
right.
Is it the one where Haywire becomes the president of the United States?
No, I don't think it was that, but...
Because I got to tell you, every time I see Silas Weir Mitchell on camera, I'm like, more Haywire, please.
Right.
He's so fucking good. He's so good.
We gave him extra work. We gave him extra work. He was, you know, he was always going to go on the escape, but he was so fun that we're like... I think we're going to kill him early in season two. And we're like, do we got to let this dude run for a bit and eat some ice cream?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and wrap it up with some fun questions, our traditional questions for Paul.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
All right, we're back. That is our show. Paul, we're going to let you go because we'll have you back soon. That is our show for today, folks. Thank you for being with us. And if you want to catch up on the Watch Party episodes, follow the Patreon link on the show page wherever you're listening right now. We have more bonus content coming up involving our call-in line.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for calling in, for sending us your questions on Instagram, sending us your fan art, listening to the show. It's just fucking beautiful. And we love you. And Paul, we have two final questions that we ask all of our guests. The first is, if you were on death row, what would your last meal be?
Sushi.
Yeah.
You're the second sushi. That's fantastic.
Really? I don't remember the other sushi. Okay.
I think it was cutlets. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. From any particular place? I'm sure you have a place up in NorCal that you like, but yes, you'd get a full sushi platter.
All the raw fish.
Okay, and our second fill-in-the-blank is a fill-in-the-blank question, and it comes in the form of advice to our listeners, which is, don't get sent to prison, folks, but if you do get sent to prison, remember to blank.
Carve a shank out of your toothbrush and carry it with you at all times.
There you go.
There you go.
Sage advice. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production. Your hosts have been friends, but not besties, Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Edelstein. Our prison warden has been producer Ben Haber. Our head of Jailhouse Rock is Paul Edelstein, who made the music for this podcast. Keeping us slim and trim, the prison yard, has been sound designer and editor, the great Jeff Schmidt. Keeping us up to date on the outside world is production assistant Drew Austin. Our prison artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato and Little Big Brands. Check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com. Follow us on Instagram at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at prisonbreaking@caliber-studio.com. And call us at 401-3-PBREAK. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you for listening.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.